Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricardo Verandes, also known as Ricky Verandes. And we have another great episode for you today. A swap cast with two dear friends. Sam Tripoli from the Tinfoil Hat Podcast. James Corbett from CorbettReport.com. Two guys that have been on the show a bunch of times. They've also been a part of these roundtable discussion swap casts a bunch of times. So please go in the archives, check them out. They're always a blast. I just love getting all the different perspectives and opinions and just kind of doing this casual back and forth, just sharing of ideas. Really, really fun discussion. It was only recorded a couple days ago, but I feel like it's already, like I'm ready late to upload it because when we recorded it, the coronavirus thing was definitely the hot topic, but now it's even crazier because all sports, or at least many of the big sports have been shut down. People are freaking out left and right. All the social media sites are just overwhelming debate about the coronavirus. I'm not a huge fan of Dr. Drew, but I agree with him on this point. And I know some people are like, oh, well, you disagree with him on this or that or whatever. I'm like, I do. But just because I disagree with somebody on one topic doesn't mean they can't make sense or we can't agree on another topic. And if you look up his videos, I agree with him. Most people who are dying are old people, people with compromised immune systems. Take your vitamins, take your probiotics, live healthy, be healthy, and you should be all right. I haven't seen any of these professional athletes that are being tested positive for coronavirus dropping dead. And even if there is one or two cases of somebody who might be healthy in the age range of age that we would consider peak health and not somebody who's really old or a newborn, then there might be exceptions to the rule. But in strokes, heart attacks, I mean, that happens to people who are athletes, and there's been cases of people who are healthy, who seem healthy and have a random heart attack. Doesn't mean that we're all in danger of having heart attacks and strokes. So a exception to the rule, I don't think should be blown out of proportion. Plus, we don't know all the details of if there is cases of people who seem healthy, aren't super old. We don't know if they had pre-existing conditions. We don't know if they had a weakened immune system because of some other issues that they might have. So I think that right now the media is getting people to watch nonstop. If you talk about the coronavirus, you're watching all those commercials that you're seeing, the pharmaceutical companies, I mean, they're all getting a part of this too, because one, the media is being able to charge more for those commercial breaks, that ad time, because they're getting way more viewership. And two, the pharmaceutical companies, which the U.S. just passed a bill, and I'm sure many of these countries and governments have passed a bill that's just throwing money into pharmaceutical companies in regards to research and development, any, you know, trying to come up with a treatment, trying to figure this thing out. So they're getting all this money to research and develop a vaccine or a treatment or whatever it may be, which usually comes out of the pharmaceutical company's pocket. And then if they do come up with something, the government's going to throw them all this money to buy all this stuff before it's ever tested to be safe or proven to be safe. So it's a win-win situation for the media. It's a win-win for big pharma. Like I said, I'm not seeing a lot of cases, if any at all, of people who have been proven to be healthy and normal and no pre-existing conditions just dropping dead. When that happens, maybe, you know, I'm not married to any idea. Maybe in a couple weeks, I'll admit that I'm wrong and that maybe this is a bigger deal than I thought. But until then, just get some vitamin D, get some sun, get some fresh air, take, you know, exercise, take care of your body. And hopefully if you do get the coronavirus or any type of flu symptoms, just like most people who get the flu around this time of year, you're sick for a couple weeks. Just like I think just about all these professional athletes, I think it's going to happen to them unless, like I said, they could have some pre-existing condition that you're not aware of. But most of these athletes, if not all of them, they're going to be sick for a couple weeks, have flu-like symptoms, and they're going to be fine. So everybody's freaking out about them, this person or that person being diagnosed with the coronavirus or are testing positive for it. But until the symptoms are anything more than just flu-like symptoms, who cares that they're tested positive for it? I just don't see what, obviously it's the media who's just scaring people and them just saying that, oh, this person has a coronavirus, that person has a coronavirus. It gets people to watch. It just adds to just people being freaked out. So that's my take on it. We briefly talk about it on the podcast, but I didn't get this in depth with it, so I figured I want to give you my take. Now, to other news, great podcast, by the way. I really, really enjoyed talking to Sam and James. Hopefully we'll do more of these. It's been a while since we did the last one. Hopefully we do more of these in the near future. Also, can't thank Jake Fiers, who is a fan of the podcast, enough. He is a fan of the podcast who has heard me talk about doing shirts for the podcast. He eventually hit me up and he's like, you know what, Rick, I'll give you a great deal. I'll hook you up and I'll make these shirts for you. And kind of forced me to finally stop procrastinating and getting these shirts done. So Jake Fiers, give him a shout out. He has a website, poorpresscollective.com. Also, the other URL that will take you there is poorasfuck.com. That's P-O-O-R. Check out his website. Check out his work. I'll have links in the show description to his website. Just want to give him a shout out and hopefully have these shirts soon. And once I do have them, you'll see on my social media sites, on Facebook, on Instagram, Twitter. That's RVTheory6 on Instagram, RVTheory6 on Twitter. My personal Facebook page is Ricky Verandas. Or you can look up the Ripple Effect Podcast. You'll find the Ripple Effect Podcast's Facebook page. You can hit us up on there too. And just stay connected. That way, once these shirts are out, I'll let you know how to buy them, how to purchase them, and all that stuff. And you can see them. Thanks a lot, Jake Fiers, for hooking me up and for getting me to finally get these shirts out. I mean, I've been doing this show for 6 years. It's about time I have some merch. And it'll help, because that, with the Patreon page, which is another way of supporting the show, that will also be in the show description, a link to the Patreon page. That money helps me pay for the storage, for the bandwidth, all those little fees for the URL name, the RippleEffectPodcast.com, all those little fees that add up. And if I can just cover that stuff, I am happy for the time being. So thanks a lot, guys. And what else? Bunch of shows coming up. I don't know how the hell I'm going to do any shows that doesn't cover the coronavirus. I almost feel like fans are going to be pissed. That's all they want to talk about. But maybe that's not what they want to hear. Maybe it'll be a relief just watching or listening something that is different than the coronavirus, because it's just, I feel like it's just taking over our lives. But enough about the coronavirus. If any of you guys want to watch us have the conversation, because I forgot to mention this, on our YouTube channel, RV Theory 6, or just look up the Ripple Effect Podcast, you'll be able to see the video versions of our episodes, including this one, where you can actually see the guests and I, not all guests calling using video, but especially lately. Most of them have, so you can actually see us have the discussion and talk. So check that out. Make sure to like our show, rate our show, review our show, share our show. Make sure to support the guests I've been on too, because that's how they're going to continue doing the great work that we all love, is us supporting them. So please do that. And that's it. Show description. I think I told you guys on your YouTube channel in the show description, I have links to all my stuff, my music, which you hear in the podcast, which can go to, that money goes to supporting the show, our guests' work, all my work, all that stuff, Patreon page, Poor Press Collective, all that stuff. So so that's it. Thanks again, guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you on the next one. Peace.
Hey, hey.
What's up?
They are. Oh. Hell, the gang's all here.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Nice. Everybody's here. You guys see me?
Oh my God. Are you okay? Are you okay?
I'm fine. I just realized I was recording New World Next Week a week or two ago, and I had a little coughing fit during New World Next Week, and I think some rumors started.
That
about
is
my
hilarious.
Health.
When did
you die?
No, literally, I had something in my throat, but I'm okay, guys.
That is hilarious. It's wild times, man. It's like it is really, people are acting like it's the end of the world. It's nuts, dude. Well, first of all, I haven't talked to Sam since he's joined the Dad's Club. Sam, congratulations, man.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate that. So blessings. They're running me. These girls are running me. But it's a blessing. Twin girls is wonderful, and I love it.
Dude, awesome. How old?
They are 1 month and 2 days.
Dude, that's you're going through the boot camp period right now, where it's like,
oh, yeah, dude. They are training dad.
It's funny because when I first had my son, and you're surviving off like caffeine and no sleep, I'm like, I remember telling my wife, I'm like, I feel like I've overslept my whole life, because I'm like my whole life I keep thinking I need more sleep, and I'm like, I can actually, even though you're not really surviving, you know, feeling great, you feel like crap all the time and you're tired, but you're making it work. Yeah. But yeah, it's I'm a twin actually, so that's
amazing.
Yeah.
How do we know which Ricky we're talking to?
Yeah, that's true.
He doesn't have the goatee going. You know?
Well, it's
which
funny.
One's the evil one?
Twins are like Mother Nature's clones, right? They're just like, they're two of you. Bang it out, man.
It's very funny. Well, I hear my mother talk about how like it was stressful growing up, because like one would stop crying and the other one would start crying, and then it was just like there's never, because at least when you have like one newborn, like you have some downtime, but when you have two, it's like you better hope they're on the same schedule, because if not, like I could just imagine how tough that
is. You don't even want them on the same schedule. You actually want them about 30 minutes off from each other. You want them off just a little bit so that you could deal with one and then deal with the other. Yeah. But they're actually at the same schedule. That is chaos. You have to pick which crying you care more about, like which one's a real cry, which one's an attention cry. Yeah. And, you know, you just talk through it. You're like, yeah, I know you're mad. I know. It's like you're more calming yourself down than everything, because, you know, you don't want to hear your kids crying. You're like, it's painful, you know, and it's just like you're just talking yourself down not to just panic. You're really Secret Service. That's what you are for these kids. You're Secret Service, and your whole job is keep the target alive till mom gets home. That's my whole job.
Well, it's just crazy, because I remember leaving the hospital, and I'm sure every parent had the same type of experience where you're leaving, and you're like, 24 hours ago, I was just a person, and now I'm a parent. And you're like, I had no training. I didn't read a manual. Like they're just gonna trust me that I'm gonna keep this thing alive, that I'm responsible enough and prepared enough to, like, it was just like, I remember just like, I'm like, no, I don't feel different, but all of a sudden I'm a parent. Like, it was so weird. And you get that perspective of, like, I remember growing up, and my parents would always give me this, they were always trying to convince me that, like, oh, we're parents, we're adults, we have it all figured out, listen to us. And once you become a parent, you're like, holy shit, like, they don't have it all figured out, and we're all just trying to figure it out as we go. And you know, it's just, I guess you try to give your kids the sense of security, and that, like, you know, I mean, they, and it's weird, because it's like, do my kids look at me the way I looked at my parents, like this all-knowing, all protecting, you know, thing. And I'm like, I don't.
Oh, yeah, dude. Well, and then they're going to grow up and they're going to think you're morons, you know. and like every moment.
Yeah. My kids are at the perfect age. They're just old enough to appreciate and want to be with Papa. But when they hit teens. Oh I know.
But I also think as dads, we don't get appreciated till much later. Like right now, it's all mom. Mom's all love. Dad, we have come in. Like, I'm not obviously their month and there's no disciplining. It's just survival, you know, sending them all this love. But, you know, as they get older, dad is disciplined. Dad's all that stuff. So he's more of the meanie guy, right? Even though you love him and all that stuff. But you don't appreciate dad till you get to the work. But till they graduate, they get to the workforce, they're dealing with people, and then they realize, like, my dad had 19 jobs.
Yeah.
Like, like, man, how did you do it? You're just like, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you so much more than you do. But right now, it's just like, it's just survive, you know, win and survive. That's basically what it is right now, and just keep them alive. And you learn a lot about your mate, too. Like, your differences start coming out. Like, because I'm, like, really into reading all these, like old spiritual books, some Hindu books to them. I'm reading about the pineal gland. I'm reading all this stuff to them. And like, she's in the kitchen yelling, "There is no God." And I'm just like, let's get on the same page here, you know? But it's very interesting, man. It's very, and I'm very blessed and I loved it. And you know, for me, it's my career has always been like kind of a crazy thing. And I always said, I'm not going to have kids. So, you know, I'm financially stable and I'm blessed to be in a good place. And bam, two twins, dude, out the gate. And here we are, man. I love it.
Yeah, there's going to be times where the kids are going to bring the partners together. And there's going to be times where it's going to really, there's going to be trying times, you know, where it's really going to test you guys. Because, I mean, when you're working on little sleep, when you're working on, and a lot of times it's coming, like you both, one thing I always try to remember, it's like, even when we disagree, like our purpose, we both have the same purpose. We want what's best for the kids, and we just might have a different, you know, opinion on what that is. And coming together is you know, it's sometimes more difficult, because before that, it's like everything's the honeymoon period. Like, you're just hanging out, you're going out to eat, you're talking, you yeah. know. But now it's like, you know, you have huge decisions to be made. How you discipline, how much you discipline, if you discipline, you know. I mean, some people want to, you know. I mean, I don't. I remember I tell my wife, I'm like, I didn't like rules growing up. I'm kind of really laid back when it comes down to that stuff. I'm like, if they want to wear, you know, red sneakers with a blue shirt, who cares? I'm like, you know, I'm like, I'm going to ask them, like, hey, just put on your white sneakers that matches. But if they don't want to, I'm like, whatever. You know, it's like, I'm going to pick
your battles.
Yeah, pick your battles. Battles. Yeah. And so.
Well, that's kind of dads and moms. Like, moms are very much like the most paranoid of conspiracy theorists, right? Like, everything might lead to tragedy. And they're like, they're over, like, protective, which is great because that's what me. And then dads have always been kind of like, yeah, let's see how it works out. You know, that's kind of how the role, like, moms help, that studies show moms help kids get the task where dad's like, get the kid, do it. Let's see if you can do it. And that's kind of the yin and yang of it all.
This is a very important point, because it's no different than like starting a business with somebody where like, I suck a number. Well, I don't suck. I hate numbers. So like, I would be the marketing person or the networking person, a company. And I would get somebody where they're, you know, they're good at what I suck at, and it'd make a great business relationship. Same thing with like your partner. Like, women are naturally better at things than guys are, and there's no shame in that. Like, now we live in a world where it's just like one gender, everybody's good at everything, and everybody should, you know. It's like, but to me, it's like, there's like, it's not, you're not putting women down by saying you guys are great at these skills and we suck at those skills and we're good at other skills. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, and we've survived thousands and thousands of years because we make a good team, because they bring things that help us survive, and we bring things that help us survive. So I think that's really important. I think men's roles have changed a little bit. Like, a lot of guy fathers my age or a little older, a little younger, they were much more hands-on. Like, my father, like, he never said, "I love you." He never hugged me. His role was, he came home, he leave him alone because he's too tired from working for, you know, too many hours. And that was it, you know. And I've, you know, I joke around with my wife. I'm like, I've told my kids more in the first 24 hours of being alive that I love them than I heard my whole life. It didn't mean, I don't mean that my father didn't love me. I'm sure he did, but it just, he, and I have to remind myself, Mike, and I'm sure he learned a parent from his parents, my grandparents, like, they were also, that was what happened. All the nurturing and loving came from the mother. And that was a different time, too, because that's when you had stay-at-home moms and you could, you know, the state wasn't raising your kids, or the, you know, the basically daycare and public schools weren't raising your kids. People were actually hands-on. Which is super important. I think that's a huge issue, you know, and when you become a parent, you realize that, like, if you're not at home, like, and you're at work all the fucking time, who's influencing your kids? It's not you, you know, like, who's like, your kid's a sponge, and so many things they're taking in that you have, like, no, I mean, there's times that my kids say stuff and I'm like, wait, you heard that? Or you remember that? Or you know, and I'm sure James, same thing with yours. Cause I think our kids are similar age. My son just turned 5, my daughter's 3. And, you know, so it's one of those things where, like, they're at that age where, like, they surprise you with how much they're and how much they're processing and understanding. And so it's like, and if they're not getting stuff, that information from me, or then who are they getting it from? So, like, I tell people, I'm like, I suck at the not important jobs, like my real job. and I'm like, and I try to be really good at the most important job, and that's being a dad. Like, to me, like, that relationship with my kids, I mean, you're molding, you know, little humans, and it's like, you know, coming home, like, everything from my diet to exercise to everything is going to help me become a better parent, because I'm going to have a higher tolerance, you know, because I took, you know, I got some energy out of my system. I'm eating well, you know, so I'm thinking normal and I'm, you know, I'm cognitively there. So all these things. And the other thing too is, like, so, you know, we're all into alternative media and alternative perspective and thinking outside the box. The other thing, too, is, like, so, like, for example, the vaccine conversation, which is, you know, before you have kids, right, it's really easy to tell people, like, vaccines are bad and this and that, right? But once you have kids, will you practice what you preach? Like, I'm telling people that they're bad, but once I have kids, do I have the balls? Do I actually believe what I'm telling people, or the conversations that people are hearing me have on this show? And to me, I do. And I'm always curious. I'm like, I wonder, people who are saying these things, or they talk about how bad GMOs are, like, are they actually, like, taking – like, I just watched a great film. I was getting mad at my – I didn't get mad at my wife, but I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, she found, like, the nonstick pans from a while ago, and the other day she was, like, making me eggs. And she's like, and I'm like, oh, babe, don't use those. I'm like, there's C8 in that. And I'm like, it's, you know, she's like, oh, why do we still have them? I'm like, you're right. Let's throw them out or whatever. And she didn't know why I was freaking out. And so we just watched this great film called Dark Water about the attorney that ended up suing DuPont, and found out that, like, DuPont and M3 had all this research for years, knowing that this I forget what the chemical was called, but C8 was another term for it, that they were using for nonstick pans and tons of other stuff, was causing tons of health issues, and they hid this from the public, and because it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And, you know, initially, I believe it was they were using it for tanks for water resistance. And like, well, we can use this for pans, and we can use this for these and that product or whatever. And then she watched the documentary, or the film. It was an actual film. And it's funny how, like, films based on real events don't seem to get the attention that they deserve, like Kill the Messenger and all this stuff. It's like, isn't that more intriguing? Like, you could watch a Denzel movie that's complete, you know, nonsense, or you can watch something that's actually based on true events and at least learn something possibly. And but yeah, I mean, and then she's like, wow, that's crazy. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, it's nuts. So stuff like that, you become much more conscious of that. And another thing that women are really good at, if you look at, like, people, I've talked to a lot of people in the anti-GMO world, anti-vaccine, well, I wouldn't say anti-vaccine, because sometimes that's the wrong term. It's more about, like, just the choice, having the right to choose. People in that world, a lot of them are mothers. A lot of them are moms who are super motivated and about, like, you know, having the right to choose and their kids being safe. So that nurture gene in them is a great gene to because they want to protect their loved ones so much that it's a motivator for them to be the ones, you know, in the front lines, you know, being outspoken and stuff. Maybe we should let James talk. I feel like I've been ranting on forever.
I don't even know where to pick up on that. But yeah, good points raised all around. And let me just say, I remember back in when I first had kids, and the thought struck me, oh, this is what life's about. Like, what have I been doing my whole life? This is completely different now. And now that I think back, I try to think back before we had kids. I'm like, what did me and my wife even do before this?
Like, yeah,
our biggest
right.
decision was what to eat for dinner, kind of thing.
Well, it's never a dull moment. And so many things that you kind of like lost a passion for, or you stop enjoying, like become enjoyable again. Holidays and you know, just Christmas and stuff like that. I mean, obviously that, you know, marketing and a lot of that stuff is, you know, there's some evil side of some of these holidays. You know, we're just trying to get people to just care more about buying stuff than actually spending time together. But, you know, just seeing the kids enjoy, like, putting up the Christmas tree and, like, just, you know, having a reason to get the family together. That's all, like, so, so important. And so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those things. And, you know, Sam and I are very similar. I've heard you talk about this on your show. And I don't know if, James, if you went through, like, a similar type of internal dilemma where, like, I was raised Catholic, being Portuguese, you know, or Catholic, you're taught to be religious and don't question it. And that naturally made me want to rebel, because eventually I'm like, I'm asking questions. Nobody wants to answer these questions. They're just like, you know, just believe in it. And, you know, even though there's not answers, you know, believe in it and whatnot. And I didn't like that. And naturally I'm like, I'm being lied to. And I went from like one extreme to the other, where I went from the whole other side where I'm like anti-religious. You know, I remember I was like, you know, huge Richard Dawkins fans and Christopher Hitchens and all the atheists. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, yeah, they have it figured out. This is all BS. And then little by little, as I got older, and especially when I had kids, I'm like, you know what? I'm like, if I go to that other extreme, like I left one team to join another team, and they're equally as extreme. And I didn't realize that, like, wow, like there are some, like, they're saying that all religion is awful. But to me, like, one thing that I started, especially as, like, you know, you look at philosophy, like, the reason why I love philosophy is, like, it gives you a reason, or makes you think about things outside the material world, like bigger issues. And it's like, what's life really about? Like, well, all the questions that are never answered, and we can debate and have these conversations, but it takes you out of that cycle of, like, just going to work, taking out the trash, all this stuff. And it's like, we never stopped and think about, like, well, what is all this? Like, what is this really about? What's important in life? And I think, you know, as I got older, and especially when I had kids, like, and like you said, you almost feel like, okay, now I have a purpose. Like, now I have a true purpose. And it makes you rethink these bigger questions. Like, oh, this is what life's about. Like, it's, yeah, you know, it's about loving one another. It's about caring, you know, and nothing, like, it doesn't, like, kids don't, you know, it's like that old saying, like, you know, you're not born racist, you're taught racism. You know, like, you look at kids, like, they play with each other. They don't care about, you know, if you're Asian or if you're African, if you're, you know, whatever, or what religion you are, or what part of the world you are. Like, they all hang out, they play, none of that matters. And then it's like, it's the evil of the adults that end up, like, slowly polluting. And I think that's why I love kids.
It's passed on from generation, yeah, to generation to generation, which is done purposefully to create identity politics. You know, we just had a big episode. I had Adam Green on, and we, you know, Adam Green is very passionate about Jewish supremacy. And I'm more about its power. It's, you know, its power structures, and of every group, there's just wackadoodles at the top, and they make the bottom pay the price for it. And, you know, but if you kind of look at what happens, is you have this Holocaust, and we could, you know, that's another discussion on what really went on here. But, you know, you have generations telling the next generation about this horrible thing that happened to them, and how everybody hates them because of this, this, and this, and that. And there was this great tragedy done. And it just, the cycle just continues. So, and then they end up defending all of their group, regardless of whether if they know them or not. And I think that's the real psyop that is done. It's like this notion, whatever group it is, whether it's Jews, Muslims, Christians, whatever, it's like there are extremists of all groups, you know, and they all commit these horrible crimes, and then they make the bottom middle and the bottom pay the price for it. And, you know, the difference, I think, between Jews and everybody else is just their whack jobs have better day jobs, okay? They're, you know, they have better 401ks and health programs and all that, and in positions of power, because that's what they kind of work on. So I think that's just, it's like, it's, I remember being a kid, and my next-door neighbor, I'm half Italian, he's like, if anyone calls you WAP, okay, you fight them. And I go, why? And he goes, I don't know, but that's what we do. And I thought that was the craziest thing ever. And it really is just this constant passing down of this baggage that, you know, and my, you know, the blessings of my life is that I was able to see that I was turning into my father, and I love my father. He's not a bad man, but he was flawed like any superhero, right? Flawed man. And I saw those flaws starting to come into me, where this notion that other people are thinking about me all the time and other people are so jealous about how great I was. And through recovery and all that stuff, I was able to learn that nobody's caring about me, right? But when I had a talk with my dad, he talked about how his father did that to him. And it was just kind of passing down of this sickness. And, you know, I just found this article today or the other day about how, you know, Netanyahu went to Qatar and begged for more funding for Hamas. And it's like, oh, more controlled opposition. And it's just like, when you really sit down, you got to go, is there really terrorism? I mean, is there really, or like, is it just this group of people getting us all to fight with each other so they can make money and bring pain and suffering to the world? And then regardless of what your religion is, regardless of what your sect, denomination, sexuality is, it's just like, you just want to live, laugh, and love. And it's just like, we have this group of people just fighting with us right now. We got this coronavirus and everyone's going nuts over it. And it's just like yet another thing brought to you by the Russian collusion people, the Ukrainian people, the weapons of mass destruction people, the anthrax scare people. It's all the same people always and always and always. And, you know, I just kind of want to stop that. And I don't know, man. That's kind of where I'm at. That's kind of what kids have done to me. It's kind of tried to take a little more spiritual look at everything. And it's kind of changed my view in even a short month.
It'll only get more deep from here. But yeah, I hear you. And, you know, fundamentally, this is what I keep coming back to. We're fighting against an ideology. And yeah, there are adherents to that ideology in every race, in every sex, in every gender, of every sexual persuasion, of every type. It's not about the identity politics in the end. It's about the ideology. And someone who is propounding that ideology is wrong because that ideology is wrong, not because they're Muslim or Jewish or gay or whatever. It's because the ideology behind it is wrong. And that's what my fight is really about. So I keep bringing you back to that. But it's so easy to get caught in the identity politics side of it, because that's the new form of entertainment. The only problem is that that's such a self-perpetuating cycle, because, of course, you get the snowflakes on one side fighting the snowflakes on the other side. Everything is an outrage, and the polls start to polarize more and more and more so that there is no middle ground. So you have to choose a side. You're either with us or you're with them. And once it gets to that point, divide and conquer is complete. You've completely parted the population, got them fighting with each other. Mission accomplished for the people who are at the top of that system.
Well, I think the origins of your beliefs are really important to think about, because I think a lot of times we believe in stuff and we think that we were these non-emotional or we like to think that we're all logical. Even though we know we're emotional creatures, I'm logical enough where I've made this decision or I've picked this team because it makes the most sense. And we never go back. Or I think not often enough we go back and think, retrace our steps and figure out, like, okay, how did I get here? Like, was there, you know, a parent that was a Republican and told me when I was a kid that Democrats are the worst? Or is my parents Democrats and told me Republicans are the worst? And then I just picked this team and I defended it till the end of time. It's no different than, like, why somebody likes a sports team. I mean, sometimes I'll meet somebody and they're like, oh, how'd you become a Rams fan? And they'll be like, oh, my dad was a Rams fan. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, and we just look at sports like that. But, like, that happens with everything. And when you have kids, like, that's something, like, I'm really conscious about. It's like, okay, I want to it's so weird, because I'm like, how do I teach them things without worrying about pushing them in the direction that I'm at? Like, how do I keep their minds open to be like, well, right, you know, get what I'm trying to say?
Because it's always when the rubber meets the road, because what you are teaching them is really what you are modeling. It's not even about what you say to them or what you tell them. It is about the way that you are demonstrating how to act in the world. And you're doing that all the time, which is why it's such an incredible responsibility. Not to put too much pressure on you there, Sam, but this is the point that, you know, it keeps coming back to. It's like, I am modeling how to live a life and how to be in the world. And they are seeing that. And they're seeing it much more clearly than we give children credit for. Because you're exactly right, Ricky, when you were talking about your kid being very perceptive. I remember my son was two years old, maybe just about 3 years old. And he was already picking up on things between me and my wife, like when we were arguing about, no, you should take a right here. No, it's quicker if we go the other way. He's like, okay, why don't we try it this way this time, and next time we'll go the other way. And he was this incredible font of reason in these stupid petty arguments that you get into in your day-to-day life, and you're like, oh, these kids really do see and pick up on things. They really know what's going on. And so it's really about the way that we live, the way that we model what we're doing. And I am particularly blessed because I grew up in an incredibly loving household, two very loving parents who were incredibly supportive, and I had two older brothers who fought all the fights with the parents to, you know, I want to listen to my heavy metal music or whatever. By the time they got to me, you know, they weren't going to fight those fights. They just know they'll just let me live my life, and you know, they'll tell me what they think, but they're not going to tell me how to live. And I think I turned out pretty all right. And that's something that I have to keep going back to. Like, that's the way it's done. You have to model the behavior you want your kids to show to see or to demonstrate. You're not telling them how to live. You're showing them.
I got a question for you guys. Back to the vaccinations, the mother of the child has been very, she is a believer in vaccines. She's all that stuff. I've been blessed to get her to hold off on doing it over time. Now, are you guys completely anti any vaccines, or are you into trichidating just a little bit over time, so that their little immune systems can handle that and not just, I mean, like, someone please explain to me why a newborn, a baby, like, we're talking hours old, needs to get hit with a STD shot.
It's fucking
hepatitis
madness.
B shot. Someone explain this to topic. Me the logic of that, why if the mother doesn't have it, why do we have to worry about, is there a bunch of hepatitis B nurses going around with open wounds? Like, what are we worried about right here? And the logic of that. And the truth of the matter is, if you really want to know what's going on with vaccines, the healthcare system in America, and I now have healthcare. I'm blessed. I'm able to get for me and the baby's mama and thus the kids. And I'm very thankful for it. It's not as evil as I thought it was. There are some evil parts to it. But everything comes with a price tag, right? Everything, except for vaccines. There's a sign where I was at, like, hey, if you can't afford vaccines, don't worry about it. We'll give it to you for free. Right there should let you know something's up. Why is one of the greediest industries out there wanting to give you something for free? It just doesn't seem right. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm saying you should look into it. And I'm down with trichidating it a little bit over time. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm on board with you. I'm not anti-vaccine in and of itself, but the way and the schedule that it's done on obviously makes a huge difference, and the types of vaccines that are being given. Again, I'm particularly blessed to be in Japan. Actually, there was a great article that was from Children's Health Defense that was just reposted up on Global Research recently. Japan leads the way in child health. No compulsory vaccines, banned measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, which goes into the recommended vaccine schedule for children in Japan. No vaccine mandates, just recommended vaccines. They don't vaccinate against Hep B unless the mother has Hep B. Do not vaccinate pregnant mothers with Tdap. Do not give flu shots to pregnant mothers or to six-month-old infants. Does not give the MMR vaccine. Does not require HPV vaccine. So the Japanese vaccine schedule is orders of magnitude lighter than the U.S. one, which is why it's much easier to exist in this system. For people who are fighting that fight in the U.S., I definitely have sympathies for it because it's a much harder fight, as I'm sure, Ricky, you probably know by now.
Yeah, I definitely know. I've definitely had some ups and downs. I mean, we've changed pediatricians because the code word, the dog whistle of when you're anti-vaccinating your kids is always like, oh, we're holding off. And that was like they knew that what was going on. We'd say we're holding off every time we go in there. But they'd always treat you slightly different, like you're a little crazy or you're a little – and then every once in a while they'd bring things up, and then – you know, I would get in debates with the pediatrician, and I'm like, listen, I really don't want to have this conversation right now. I'm like, I don't want to get in an argument with you in front of the kid while they're here waiting. And it got to the point where just like, I'm like, you know, my wife wouldn't go to any appointments, but I'm all for it. So I'm like, you know what? No, I'll go. She's like, I don't like the way they make me feel. They always make me feel like I'm a bad parent. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, I'll get out of work early. I'm like, I will go there. I'm like, if they want to battle me, I'm like, I'll go there. I'll have no problem. It's, you know, it's spending 15 minutes of their day, debating this or talking about this. And, you know, Sam is absolutely right. If you look at things logically, okay, they tell you, like, don't bring your kid around anybody. Don't make sure you wash your hands, or, you know, when you touch a newborn. But yet it's completely okay to shoot a, you know, a vaccine directly in their bloodstream. So you're admitting their immune system is delicate. It's you know, it, and not just that. Like, I had the pediatrician. I'm like, she's like, oh, vaccines have never harmed anybody. I'm like, which was ridiculous. You know, which is ridiculous. Along, but I'm like, you do realize how unscientific that is. I'm like, that's like me saying peanuts have never harmed anybody. I'm like, peanuts don't kill everybody. I'm like, but there's some people that it's fatal. I'm like, so you saying that you can shoot any substance in any, like, in everybody, and no one will have a some inflammation, a rash, possibly, like, that's the most unscientific thing you could possibly say. Like, not everybody is the same, and nobody's testing these children to know if they'll be sensitive to any of the chemicals or the viruses, or if they're, maybe they have compromised immune systems. So it's just like, hey, we're just going to shoot them up, and most kids are okay. So I think your kid's going to be okay. And it's like, no, I don't want to take that risk. You know, it's like, to me, maybe there is a risk of my kid being unvaccinated, but you know what? Like, the best defense, even if you believe vaccines work, you're still admitting that the best defense is their immune system, because what you're doing is you're sparking your immune system to fight the virus. So to me, like, why aren't you being I guess, proactive with the parents and saying, hey, make sure your kids take probiotics, make sure they take, you know, vitamins, make sure they eat healthy, make sure, yeah, the kid that has, you know, that's eating, you know, French fries and fried chicken every day, like, yeah, he, and drinking soda, yeah, he might have, you know, a weak immune system. So he, you know, but if it's like, to me, it's like there's so many other things that they don't talk to you about. Like, you're saying that my kid,
nobody has information, to be honest with you, Ricky. Nobody has information. And the truth of the matter is this, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it infuriates me that these people, at the end of the day, people are trustworthy. They're nice people, and they want to believe that these doctors and these health officials and experts mean well. But at the end of the day, they want checks. They want to make money. They want prestigious jobs. And a lot of that only comes if you play ball. And you know what? A lot of them have been lied to. A lot of them go to these schools and they get told these theories that don't make sense. Like, most of them would know that there's no clinical testing on vaccines. If you ask people, how long is the clinical test for a vaccine? Oh, no, a couple of years. No, there's none. There's none. And then there's no lawsuit. You can't sue them. So why would they test it? It makes no sense.
Well, the liability is completely, off the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, there's a vaccine court, which taxpayers end up basically taking the bill, and that's the thing. So you take liability from them, and like you said, when they're giving them out for free, I mean, look at the coronavirus. They just Trump just I think signed a bill Friday. Like, some of the money, like, who knows how many millions and billions are and where they're going, where all this money's going, but it's for some coronavirus bill or whatever. And some money's going to the pharmaceutical companies to develop a vaccine and all this. It's like, so even if you develop a vaccine and everybody's hysterical, so they would just be like, yes, give me it first, I'll be first in line, you know, there's no testing for it. Like, you know, and that's the thing, like, you can look up stories and stories of pharmaceutical companies doing, you know, just getting fined, you know, just doing unethical stuff. But I don't understand, like, where the logic is that they took all the moral people who work for the company and said, hey, you're gonna work on our vaccine division. Like, it's just like, it's madness. It's like, it's at the end of the day, like you said, like, there hasn't been testing. And really, how would you test, you know, safety or whatnot? I mean, you would have to, like, I don't know, like, expose kids to viruses, you know, after giving the vaccine. We don't even know if they work. That's the other thing. Like, how do you – the only way to know if they worked is that you give them a vaccine and then you expose them to viruses, right? And who's going to do that? Like, that's not ethical. So it's like that's why Del Bigtree, he's been on the show, and the Vax documentary I thought was a great documentary, because it wasn't an anti-vax documentary. It was just like, here's some information, here's a story that's been suppressed, and you know, come up with your own conclusion. And I think that's super. To me, it's a huge issue, because even there's a group called the CT Alliance, Freedom Alliance, in Connecticut, and which, you know, I live pretty close to the border of Connecticut and Massachusetts, and they contacted me, and hopefully I have them on soon. And they've been fighting. They just got rid of all religious exemptions for vaccines. And that's how my kids didn't get vaccinated and went to school, because apparently I'm religious. And so my you know,
I love religion.
So but like the fact that like now it's like if that's gone, you don't even have a choice. Like my wife and I, we were a little worried that like, okay, everybody's going to know we're the family with the unvaccinated kids and we're going to school. I'm like I told my wife, I'm like, listen, in a matter of time, they're going to realize like when all the other kids are sick all the time and our kid's not sick, he's not the one you got to worry about. And that's what, you know, after a while, it's like, you know, we didn't worry about anybody looking at us weird because our kids are, I mean, maybe it's a little bit of luck, but I think a little bit's also being proactive and caring about what they eat and exercising, getting sun, you know, vitamin D and all that stuff and living a healthy lifestyle and not bringing them to McDonald's and whatever, you know, which is obviously harmful to their bodies. And our kids are healthy and usually much less sick than anybody else's kids. So it's worked out. I'm like, you know what? They're a perfect example that we're not crazy. And you know, but the thing is, when you go to a doctor or a pediatrician, they will scare the shit out of your girlfriend,
oh,
Sam.
Yeah.
And she's
going
to – even if she – my wife was all on board. I did podcasts with Del Bigtree. I did podcasts with a couple of people, and I was like sending her articles and research and all this stuff. My wife was all on board. But after a couple of visits with a pediatrician and them just scaremongering and just, you know, like all of a sudden she's like, I'm having second thoughts. And then family members, like, wait, you're not vaccinating your kids? They're like, well, you know, did you see the news and you see this, you know, the Disney outbreak of measles? It's like, you did realize like most of those kids were vaccinated, right? And it's, you know, so it's like.
Nobody pays attention to those details,
yeah.
Ever. And the group mentality of like the herd vaccinate doesn't even make sense. If we all have computers and we all have virus protection and you don't have virus protection, why do we got to worry about our computers getting a virus because you got it makes zero sense. And it's all fear-based. It's all fear-based. And it's about like, you know, I had Dr. Shiva on and he was talking about how it's like these people who have like immune system deficiency. It's all about them. That's the great boogeyman, that this like 1 in 2,000, 3,000 people, which ends up being like 200,000 people in the entire country of the United States. And we're vaccinating millions and millions of people to protect these 200,000. And it does. And we're doing more harm to these this bigger herd of people that to protect this little herd. It makes literally no sense.
Yeah, I mean, I just had here's another example of how modern medicine doesn't always work. I just had Jim Abrams on, who was actually one of the filmmakers of some of my favorite films back in the day. I don't know if you guys remember Naked Gun and Airplane. And,
yeah.
I mean, some of my favorite movies growing
we're
up.
We're old there. White guys. Of course we know those movies.
And so he was on, and I don't know if you're familiar with his story, but he had a son who had like super violent seizures. I mean, up to 100 seizures a day. I think he was like 12 months when they really started getting bad. 12 months. And like, so years of, I mean, it was his son, Charlie. He was a one of three, the youngest one. And I mean, just stress that it put on the family, because think about how much attention this kid requires. Think about like the stress it puts on the family. You know, just it's wild. And as a parent, like when you hear these stories, it really hits home. And so just because, you know, you're putting yourself in their situation, I'm like, I couldn't even imagine, you know. So, you know, he's quite famous. He had money. So he got to cut in line of all – he went to see all the best doctors, went to all the best hospitals. He knew people who gave money to hospitals. So he didn't have to – you know, doctors that you have to wait months or years for, he got to cut in line. Everybody's just doing prescription drugs, surgeries, all this stuff. And like his kid was a zombie. They did surgery, which he's like was just completely useless, didn't do anything, right? So he's actually eventually, I mean, this happened for years. Eventually, he's doing research on actually he was researching how parents deal or how families deal with like a child that requires that much attention and stuff like that. And then he runs into how John Hopkins actually in the 70s was having incredible success with the ketogenic diet, you know, because your brain – because one of the issues is like sometimes your brain can't use glucose as an energy source. So if you get them on a ketogenic diet, it can use ketones. And nobody told him this. So it was like this Eureka thing where he's just like, wait, how come nobody has even brought this up as a possible option? Like – They're willing to give my kid prescription drugs. They're willing to give him surgery, but they're but nobody's even brought up that fact that there's a dietary therapy that might work. Like, I have nothing to lose. So he even goes
to his make money off it. That's why.
He goes to his doctors, right? And they tell him basically not to do it. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's whatever. And so eventually he ends up giving it a try, right? He gives it a try in 3 days. Years of his kids having seizures. 3 days, Charlie's cured of seizures. Never had a seizure again, right? So he went from being super happy, right? Because he was super happy. He's like, my kids, like, this is crazy. We got Charlie back to being angry dad, because he's like, the permanent damage that my son might have because of all these violent seizures, the years of, like, you know, just the stress it put on the family, you know, all this stuff. We couldn't have a normal, you know, life, and he couldn't grow and be a normal kid because of this. And he's like, and nobody told me about this. So, and then he started this thing called the Charlie Foundation. And it's same thing. Like, think about that. Like, this guy had access to the best doctors. He had, and modern medicine told him, like, take this pill, take that pill. Like, that's it. Like, that's a perfect example of, like, sometimes when somebody tells you something, like, you know, that seems a little crazy, like, you know what, there might be some truth to it, and you should do some research, because there is. And apparently the John Hopkins research, when they were doing the ketogenic diet, it was working. They're having tons of success. But then pharmaceutical companies came and they're like, hey, we have something easier. We've created these pills that we're also having some success with. So what ended up happening was that they ended up promoting the ketogenic diet, and it was easier to just say, hey, here's a pill. And so that's what ended up happening. But that's but if we talk about that, it's like we all agree, like, yeah, there's some issues with modern medicine, and because of the incentive of profit, sometimes they're going to push certain things on you.
And the worst part of that story is, think, none of those doctors were evil people that wanted to see this child harmed. It's just that, A, they were taught their whole life in that allopathic system, you've got to give them drugs or do surgery, that's the way we cure things. So ketogenic diet, that's crazy talk. And secondarily, also, they want to cover their ass, because they can probably get sued 7 ways to Sunday if they don't, as medical experts, recommend the prescribe. You're supposed to prescribe this drug in this case, and if you don't, so they're boxed into the system. They're not necessarily evil people, they're just in an evil system. So how else can you act in that system? How do you change that? You have to change the system itself.
I totally agree. I think sometimes we think people are more monsters than they are. And I think most of the time they're just trying to white knuckle life and get through it. And just the optics of it make it look bad. And, you know, we've done episodes on, like, you know, my opinion is, I don't know if you guys, I'm starting to believe liberalism really in this country is libertarianism. Maybe I'm wrong. But when you look at, but I think the Libertarian Party itself is at the top, is just like any party, just corrupt and controlled opposition. But if we take a look at the healthcare system here, like what we do to people who want to become doctors, like we just saddle them with so much debt that it's almost impossible for them to want to do anything on their own to go their own practice. It's like, I have to pay these off or else I'm going to get crippled financially. So they have to go in these plug and play things where they have to prescribe this kind of medication, this kind of way, this boom, 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 or else there's no work for them. And that's my whole problem. It's like, you know, I don't know why the libertarian movement focuses so much on free college and one payer healthcare when they should be talking about getting rid of fee of entry. Like, fee of entry is like crippling everybody. It's like, it's so expensive just to play ball right now that only rich people can do it, in particular in a healthcare system. I mean, just the amount of money that needs to be, there's no free market in any of this. Like, where can I go get discount healthcare in this? Where can I go get discount prescriptions? Like, real discount, like, not like, oh, instead of paying $300, I'm paying $100. I'm talking like $10 and stuff like that. It doesn't exist. It's so controlled. And I don't know why the Libertarian Party doesn't focus on it. Go on, James.
No, I get what you're saying, but libertarianism would be the free market advocates, socialism, the
not,
democratic socialists, the Bernie
say.
Supporters.
I don't see that. Sorry. Go on. Sorry, James.
Every American libertarian, at any rate, whether you're talking about the Cato Beltway libertarians or you're talking about the Tom Woods podcast libertarians or, you know, anyone in between, they would be arguing the free market side of this. You're thinking of the democratic socialists. You're thinking of the Bernie Bros, who are not libertarians.
But I just feel like just based on like, because I'm not part of the party, but based on what I see through social media, no libertarians, like what they're pushing is no free college and no one payer, which is I agree with.
Oh, no free college. Oh, I
yeah,
see. I see.
No free college. And my opinion is the free college whole thing is just these colleges invest in the military industrial complex, and that's why they don't want to give up that tuition. That's my opinion. But my point being is that I don't see them making these arguments. They're more telling people, no, you're not going to get free healthcare. Why not just like, no, you don't need free healthcare? Because like for me, it's like if you want to look at government-ran healthcare in America, go look at the VA. I mean, you hear nightmare stories about veterans trying to get healthcare and how bad it is. And like some of them just killing themselves in the parking lots because it's so bad. So obviously we don't want that. I don't know, maybe because our population's so huge, we can't have that like some other countries do. But instead getting where it's like maybe there's no patents on prescription medication or drugs, and anybody can make the drug as long as it's health. And then there's a battle for your dollars and stuff like that. And just getting rid of fee of entry for like the medical community, like doctors, so that when they get out of med school, they're not so in debt. Like those are things I think would resonate with voters instead of saying, no, you don't get any health care. No, you can't go to college for free. I think that's right. In my opinion.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made there. And yeah, getting rid of the IP system in general would be incalculably beneficial to the system as a whole and would eliminate so much of the garbage nonsense that is propagated in the pharmaceutical industry in particular, let alone so many other industries.
I don't know how you change it. I mean, like, let's face it. Big pharmaceutical is straight up gangster, man. I mean, there's a whole story about Trump's had a guy he put in charge of trying to reduce prices of pharmaceutical drugs, and he was found with killing himself with two shots to the back of the head, which is totally typical for a suicide, which totally makes sense. But you know,
what the answer is, though. You know what's going to save us? Vote harder, guys. Come on, you're not voting hard enough. Just tick that box a little bit more forcefully, or touch that screen with a little bit more power, and there you go. That's the answer, guys. We're going to vote in someone to drain the swamp.
I'm so on board, James, and I get it. I get in so many small little debates with people because people will be like, you're so aware of what's going on. How come you don't vote? How come you don't, you know? And I'm like, because it would be like me voting for like who's going to win, Hulk Hogan or Macho Man, like. It's like it's theater. Like it's pretending I believe that the system works. To me, like there's so many people who get so caught up in like the Russiagate and the Trump scandals and this and that. And like to me, like I'm oblivious to a lot of it. And because to me, like all this infighting, I'm like this shit happens all the time. Like yeah, there's scumbags who are trying to screw other scumbags. Because they're all trying to do the same thing, trying to get in power, trying to do favors for people. And I'm like, it's General Hospital. It's a soap opera. It's a reality TV. I'm like, so why would I get caught up in like who's backstabbing this guy and that guy? You know, like to me, it's like it's all like the big picture conversations to me are much more important. And if I get caught up in like all these every day a different headline about, you know, this and that and this guy resigns and then this guy, you know, it's like. Does any of it matter? Like it's the whole system's messed up and it's proven over and over again. It doesn't matter who becomes president. A lot of stuff doesn't change. Like it's still, you know, war spending. I mean, Trump's.
I'd like to ask you guys something real quick. Do you think that we're trying to get out of Afghanistan?
Well, James would, he's talked about it on his show recently.
Yeah, no, I'll believe it when I see it. But if so, it's not to get out of Afghanistan. It's more to get into Iran and to maintain the presence there. There are suggestions that there have been secret side deals made as part of the official deal that basically it's Taliban. Yeah, okay, you guys can have more of a share in the Afghan government, but we're going to keep some troops in the region in order to pressure Iran. And you guys are basically going to be more pressuring Iran as well. I don't know. I mean, who knows about what secret agreements have been made? They have said there were two secret clauses, essentially classified clauses in the agreement that we're not allowed to know about. So who knows what it is? But even so, there's 18,000 ways they could undermine that agreement between now and when the troops are supposed to leave a year plus from now. It's theater. It's theater.
Well, yeah. I mean, like a Taliban peace deal. Like, what does that even mean? Like, that's like me going to like the Bloods and the Crips and be like, hey, how about we shake hands and you're like, not going to sell drugs in my block anymore. Like, it's just.
I don't even believe it's that. I believe it's like if the neocons want war, all they have to do is like blow something up and say it was the Taliban and the peace.
Like they did. Like they did 19 years ago. Exactly.
It's 100%, dude. It's like, let's say this is real in a weird way. Taliban wants us gone. We've agreed to gone. Why would they blow anything up? It makes no sense. Why would you even put that clause in there? Because it's a clause that allows you to get out of this deal. It gets you optics that you're trying, and then these scumbags from around the way just blow something up, blame it on the Taliban, and here we are. Now this peace deal is in risk. I mean, listen, I don't know why we just don't go, hey, pharmacy companies, you make so much money. Just hire Blackwater to protect your poppy fields. Because that's, to me, what this is really about. Obviously, the Iran stuff as well. But it's really about these poppy fields because the Taliban they were burning them all down because they didn't want them. And we couldn't have that anymore because we're ran by big pharmaceuticals. And we have to have troops protecting these poppy fields. Just pay for them. Just pay for Blackwater to go do it or some mercenaries or something like that.
But isn't it
important? Eric Prince's ears are ringing right now.
Yeah,
so that's a great idea, Sam.
He's like Kramer, just comes through the door. Hello.
But I've also heard that outside of the poppy fields, it's just always super important to have some type of base or military there because of strategy reasons. Like it just you have access to other countries right from there, and so I don't think we're obviously ever going to leave, just like we're never going to leave the Middle East. I mean, a huge thing that Trump was kind of saying when he was running was like, hey, we're going to get out of the Middle East. And I remember people retweeting when Obama was in office, Trump tweets that said, things like, oh, what are you doing in the Middle East? It's a waste of money and all this stuff. And obviously, he's saying all the right things in regards to like PR, but like it's not happening. And I mean, you see things like, what happened with Venezuela, with us being involved in their government, what happened with Iran. Like, we're still getting involved in governments. We're still instigating war. We're still, playing this whole political, geopolitical chess. So I just think it's a lot of it's just theater. And so the coronavirus, because obviously that's the hot topic of late. Do you think that who politically is gaining from this? And do you think that, there is what's your opinion on it? Because you both have done a little bit of some podcasts and some research on it. Do you guys have I'm sure the listeners would like to know, because I've heard some people saying that like China's hiding how, these numbers and it's way worse than what we're being told. And then I hear James, like in your video, you're talking about how they're testing people. And there's some, questions on like, do people actually have the coronavirus and how are these numbers going up so quickly? So, what's your guys' opinion on that after doing some research?
James, you can go first.
Well, on that note, I got to go. My next interview is waiting, so I'll leave you on that note. please look. I've done a few videos on it, written a couple of articles so far. My short answer is, I don't know, real, fake, man-made, natural, some combination, some vaccine-related thing, some 5G-related thing. There's 18 million options on the table, and I don't know, and newsflash, neither do you. Anyone who's listening, there's so many people who are so certain, I know what's going on, and they really don't. But I do know that this is going to be used to implement a bunch of different agenda items. So again, like so many other things, I don't know if it was staged or fake or whatever, but it doesn't really matter whether it's real or fake, as long as they can get their agenda items through. And so I did a big, long article about that called Coronavirus, the Cures Will Be Worse Than the Disease, that people should read if they're interested in that, because this is going to change people's lives. Or it has the potential to completely change the way we are living our lives. People are already starting to see that with the economic effects, and there's going to be much more coming down the line here. So that's what I'm worried about. I'm much more worried about what governments are going to do as a result of this. And that's where I'm going to have to leave it.
James, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. I just love all your work. I love what you do. And I appreciate you spending a little time with us. Ricky, I love you too. And, you know, I know this is probably shorter than our normal videos, but baby times and busyness. And I'd love to do these once a month if possible. I know you guys are both busy, but let's definitely do it again. Yeah. And both of you guys are doing great work. And, you know, whenever we can get the team back together, I'm always blown away you guys asked me to do it. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And we'll keep in touch. Like usual, we're probably pissing off James's fans because we spend the first 20 minutes, instead of talking about the hot topic, coronavirus, we talked about being dads.
But I think that's great.
I know. I think so, too.
There's a lot of dads and a lot of parents out there. And sometimes it's good to talk about the simple things that impact people's life day to day. Because the truth is, where's the coronavirus? Right now, it's not my house. Thank God. I got two kids. You got kids and everything like that. So I would talk daddy with you guys all the time.
All right. Thanks. Awesome. Well, let's do it again soon, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, everybody.
Yep. Take care.
See ya. Take care.